This is the crossover. Hosted by Chris Brockman.
Welcome to the ROFFL podcast. You know, we did one last week. Well, it's actually the crossover, and I'm your host, Chris Brockman. But we're doing it ROFFL style, probably this entire, for the rest of the fall, because, let's be honest, football is back. Training camps opened last weekend across the league. Hopefully you all enjoyed my riveting podcast with Parker and Mark. It ended up being a three-part series. With part one, we were in cruising right along, I-15 through the desert. Part two was post-car dying, and then we were taped the rest of it from the side of the road, 80 miles from Las Vegas. And then part two was after we all got our shirts handed to us and our tails between our legs as we drove back to Los Angeles, which was... If you've ever done the drive from L.A. to Las Vegas post-wild 24-hour trip... It's one of the most miserable experiences, even if you win a ton of money, because you're so exhausted, you're so tired, but you're trying to plow through. You're eating Taco Bell. It's so hot. Usually there's traffic. It's misery. If you can fly to Las Vegas, fly to Las Vegas, to and from. But that's just my recommendation. Okay, so this guy hit me up and was like, hey, great pod last week. I have so much to talk about. You need to have me on. And I always want to have this guy on, but he's never available. He's always busy. He got married, which, by the way, we just passed the one-year anniversary of that, so congratulations. So in ROFFL terms, he had a four-year playoff run come to an end last season. He was the runner-up in 2009. And let's not forget, as he so often reminds us in his column, what good-looking people think. He is a two-time winner, 2003, 2006. I'm only talking about one man right here. Five-second stare owner, Jay Cantor. Was that a good enough intro for you, buddy?
I like that. I was basically just begging to be on the podcast. I have such an ego. I just want to hear my voice in all different types of mediums. So, yeah, I really wanted to be on the show. And last week's podcast was awesome. I really enjoyed the hell out of it.
Well, good. Thank you. Like I said, now that we're getting into the thick of things, we can kind of do these more often. I brought it back a little bit last year. I think we did about six of them last year, so hopefully I can get those guys who aren't on. Oh, I'll have to talk to Scott as we get ready. Him and the micro statistics about... Man, Scott is crazy with the stats and the...
I see this guy do his thing, and I'm like, how am I going to beat him? I don't... As
right,
much effort
exactly.
as I put into it, I'm like, God, he put so much more effort into it than even I do, and I spend hours on it. How am I going to beat this guy?
Yeah, you see what he does, you see what he publishes. He won the damn thing in 2012, and I can't top that. Everyone thinks, oh, you work at the NFL. Great. That doesn't mean anything. That means I know things like 10 minutes before everybody else, so that doesn't really translate into the fantasy world.
Right, social media-wise, everything that you know will find out. Somebody at practice will tweet it 5 minutes after you find out about
exactly.
it.
Exactly. You will find out eventually. Like I'll send out a message on the group meet, and then 10 minutes later, you know, everybody knows about it. So it's like, I'm not really breaking news. It's going to be public knowledge.
Right. Technically, though, it is nice to have an in-source. But what Scott does with the information and how he sorts it out, he's like Billy Beane. And when I'm like Sandy Alderson or something like that, it's not necessarily fair.
Before we came on, we'll talk about you for a second. You said I believe that. You're going back to school? You're a college student now?
Yeah, I get student discounts now. I am in the process of getting my second master's degree in administration. So after I finish this up, I'm doing an online course at Capella University. So I'm taking three classes right now. Over the summer, because I'm not really working that much over the summer. It's a few days, so I have time. So I'm taking my three classes right now, all online. It's not easy, but it's certainly a lot easier on the on the schedule. I don't really ever want to go back to, like, classes again. I don't want to do that ever again.
Right.
I don't want to go to a campus.
Where does this online school rank in the online-only school hierarchy? So there's, like, University of Phoenix. There's now Southern New Hampshire University. And way, way down is Arizona State, which I think you can take – you can take all. There's a bunch of interns and a couple of kids who from Arizona State. And when they're like, "Oh, at the NFL," and they're like, "Oh, where'd you go to school?" "Oh, I went to Arizona State." And I just look at them and I deadpan. I go, "Oh, so you couldn't get into any real schools?" And they look at me like I told them, you know, that their dog just died. But those kids know that Arizona State is a shitty school, right?
They got it. I mean, it's like, you know, when you grow up in you grow up in a certain city or you grow up in a certain area, and there's this one school where it's like, all right, so you didn't get into anything else.
Right.
So you gotta
they just take everybody. There's the no joke, I think 80,000 people at Arizona State.
Yeah, I mean, so I went to school in upstate, I went to school in Binghamton, right? And there was the school that, there was a community college in Binghamton, and you know that if you go to high school in that city and you couldn't get anywhere else, not only Binghamton University, but Syracuse or any of the state schools over there. All right, so I'm going to go to this community college in Binghamton that accepts everybody and their mother. It's the true in Brooklyn over here. We got the same thing also. My students that can't get in anywhere else go to this particular school, Kingsborough. So it happens. It's everywhere. I'm sure the Arizona State people know that that's who they are. Jake Plummer ain't no genius.
Jake Plummer, I think, is a world-class handball player right now.
Maybe he is a genius, you know.
He's really making the most of that Arizona State. Okay, so that's pretty exciting. So are you excited to get back into this? I mean, certainly it's more time you've got to carve out. Is this going to take away from your ROFFL preparation, dedication? Does that mean we're seeing less columns out of you now because of this?
I certainly hope not. I don't think so. The good thing about it is that because it's online, I'm able to kind of, as long as I budget the time correctly, it shouldn't be infringing on anything. It certainly hasn't infringed on my ability to do research for this coming draft. I have really, really put a lot of time and effort into the first pick, and we can talk about this later, but after the absolute garbage that was my draft last year, I really wanted to focus on, like, the second and third pick in the draft, so I've been, like, thinking long and hard about, like, the first, like, 65 picks, worry, like, thinking about that. I don't do, like, a full mock like I think some other people do, but I'm really worried about, like, second and third picks, and I think, like, kind of in the middle of the draft, so the school has not really interfered with that. It's been an interesting process. I'm glad I'm doing it. I kind of needed to do it for my own sake. It gives me a little flexibility. If I ever want to leave New York, I can kind of do that now because I can become, like, I never want to be a principal of a school, but I can be, like, the head of a math department, which is kind of what I like doing, kind of like helping other math teachers and other teachers. So it gives me the flexibility to kind of do that in a different state if I wanted to move out of New York. So it kind of opens things up for that.
That's great, man. That's great. Good for you. Good for you. Good and good luck going forward. Okay. Now nobody cares about your stupid life. So let's talk about the only thing that matters right now.
And this is where everybody fast forwarded to right here.
Everybody fast forwarded to about the, you know, eight minute mark or so. This is it. This is another ROFFL season. This is number 13 that we're embarking on. And by the way, four people, is that right, have won two championships?
Parker, Navi, Rich, and myself, I think, right?
Yeah, Parker, Navi, yourself, Rich. So that's eight. So eight out of 12. So we've only had eight. We've had eight different champions. So we still have six guys without a title as we embark on our 13th year. That is just so crazy to think about. Now, where should we start? Where do you want to start with this? Because we could go right into who we think people are keeping. I sent out an email in early June with kind of my predictions. Scott will have his predictions in the draft book, which comes out in a couple of weeks. We could go there, which could lead us into how we think the first round is going to play out.
I like that. I actually, early earlier today, I was I'm going away this weekend, so I had my car in the city, so I had to sit in my car for an hour and a half for alternate side parking. So while I was in the car, I did a mock, like, just the keepers. I did all the keepers while I was in the car, so I have that actually, like, right in front of me now. So we can totally do that.
Oh, let's do it. Okay, let's start at the top. Let's start at the top.
Okay.
So VA, we think, is keeping Demaryius and Arian Foster?
I am with you 100% on that. I guess the only other option is C.J. Spiller.
Okay.
But I think that there's just with Jackson still there, I just don't think he'll do that. So I agree 100%.
Okay, great. All right, moving on. Josh, see, now here's where you and I were talking about the other day over text message. Mm-hmm. See, I think Josh is going to go receivers. So A.J. Green, DeSean Jackson.
Yeah, you're right. My mess up, and I didn't realize this, is that I didn't realize Forte cannot be kept, which changed everything for me, by the way. Like, that was, like, not knowing that for whatever, because he had gotten traded in the middle of, like, two seasons ago.
Right.
And I didn't realize. And so not knowing that Forte was going to be kept changed everything, because he's one of, like, the five best players on the board now.
One
of the maybe three best. So yeah, now he's got no other options, really. He's going to go Green and Jackson.
Right, and now look. I think the Bengals could be really good this year. I think they could. AJ Green's obviously a monster. You know, Andy Dalton. Oh no, my call failed with the Spaniard. All right, well, let's call him back and see what happens. I guess when you're relying on technology here, maybe he hit a dead spot there in New York City. So I'm going to kill some time until he picks back up. I'm not even going to stop the clock. I'm not even going to do it. Man, what is with these podcasts recently? And we're like having to cut out and. At least,
yeah, it's back and forth.
At least
is everything okay? Are we back on?
Yeah, we're back on. And you know what? I didn't even stop the recorder, so I'm not even going to edit this out. We're just going to roll with it.
Okay. Perfect. I love it.
Now, I think AJ Green's going to have a great year, obviously. I'm not one of those Andy Dalton haters like a lot of Bengals fans are. DeSean Jackson, now, this is an interesting situation that he's with the Redskins. How you feel he's going to do this year depends on your thoughts about Robert Griffin III.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Are you sold on him?
On Griffin? Well, I think that there are enough receptions to go around. I am kind of sold on him. I'm gonna kind of forget that last season really happened. Everything, I mean, he did finish the second half of the season okay. I didn't realize how many receptions Garcon has. He's going to lose. Not all of them, but he's only about 15 or 20 to Sean.
Right.
But I'm always wary of a wide receiver. I mean, it does happen. I don't know what the percentages are, but I am always wary of a receiver that changes teams. Even if a receiver as good as Jackson. I know it's happened before, like Vincent Jackson had no problem going to Tampa. But I'm always... Jackson's young enough, I guess, it shouldn't make too much of a difference, but I always get a little scared of that stuff. However, I think that the offense is good. I think with Jackson, I think with Garcon, I think Reed is going to be a really good tight end. I think whoever drafts him at the right spot is going to get a good pick there. And with Morris, I think the offense is in a good spot. As long as the offensive line holds up, I don't see a reason why RG3 wouldn't be very good this season. I don't want to draft him, that being said, but I wouldn't be surprised whoever gets him is going to be one of these boom or bust picks. I got a feeling it's going to be a boom.
Wow, interesting. Yeah, I think the Redskins are a team that I think the only player I would want on there is Alfred Morris, which is interesting because I passed on Alfred Morris last year.
Yeah, and I'm not keeping him. So he's
back in. I mean, he's gonna be the second running back taken.
You know what? It's a good question because I was talking with somebody else about this, and other than Forte, there is not a single running back that I think is really kind of worth a first round pick. Other than I don't know, I think maybe DeMarco Murray. Depending on what you think of Murray, I think Murray could be a first round pick.
I think he's going to be. He could be snagged on the back end there. Someone like Jason Dave. Yeah, that's a Parker pick.
Scott could keep Murray over Doug Martin. I don't know what he'll do. I mean, I guess those two are a little bit closer than I initially thought. And we'll get to him in a second, but I don't know. I mean, what would you do if you had DeMarco Murray and Doug Martin? Which one would you keep?
That's a good question. I guess it depends on how you feel those teams are going to do this year. Now, Dallas is going to be trailing in a lot of games. And that doesn't normally bode well for the running attack. But Murray is let's see if I can stall enough while I look up DeMarco Murray's receiving stats.
Yeah, he's a bit more of a pass catcher.
So he ended up catching the beauty of high speed internet access. He got 53 passes last year. So, you know, in a league like ours, he combined for 1,500 yards of offense and 10 touchdowns. So that, I mean, you'd think he would be right there off of, maybe I'll take DeMarco Murray now. He's one of those, I'm talking myself into it. But you got to figure he's going to get the ball a lot, you know, because Dallas is going to have to play kind of a little control game with the ball until they get behind, which they seemingly will because their defense is terrible. So with Tampa, you got a new quarterback, okay? You got all kinds of receivers down there. And then you got Doug Martin coming off of an injury. So It takes a while. It takes a half a season to kind of get back into the flow of things when you're coming off of injury. We've seen that unless you're Adrian Peterson and just like the Terminator. So we've kind of seen a history of that. So I'm wondering, I mean, it's a toss-up. I mean, if we want to jump ahead, I have Scott keeping Doug Martin just because. I'm kind of leaning towards DeMarco Murray, but Doug Martin, I feel like, is a little bit more of a home run hitter.
Yeah, and he is also a huge pass catcher. He's younger, but I mean, there's both injury question marks now with both of them, not just Murray anymore.
Exactly.
So we know for sure he's keeping. Well, I guess we're jumping around, but we know for sure he's keeping Keenan Allen.
Right.
So I guess, and you know, it's one of those things that if for people that care about who Scott's keeping, it really just comes down to who's picking late in the draft. You and I are picking on the earlier side of things, so honestly what Scott does doesn't affect either of us. It really kind of affects like who these running backs are that are going to be around after pick like 7, 8, 9.
Right, and it's really, it's really curious as to see what people value. So if you look at a guy like Dave, we are going to jump around. So Dave's kind of the bottom of the draft. I have him keeping two running backs. You know, depending.
You have him keeping Lynch and. Is it Brown or Sproles?
Lynch and Sproles.
Sproles, wow.
Because of the pass catching. And I think, man, he could absolutely be a monster in that Eagles offense. So, you look at that, he's not worried about running backs because he's set. If you look at everybody else. Nobody else is keeping a running back. So at some point, these guys are going to have to take two picks and use them on running backs. And the NFL these days, it's a handful of guys who get the bulk of the carries. And those guys are all being kept aside from Murray, Martin, McCoy. Forte. So it's just curious as to where, you know, the direction this league has taken in recent years and where people value them. Like receiver, just the passing offenses, receivers are such a premium. And now running backs is kind of, all right, well, I'll take this guy and hope that he gets 15 carries and maybe gets a touchdown this week.
Yeah, it's one of those things where as long as you can draft and that's why Reggie Bush is so bad. I don't know where he'll go, but that's why, again, you have a guy, as long as you can get a running back that's going to catch 50-plus passes, have 800 yards on the ground, and maybe can combine for 8 or 9 touchdowns for the entire year, you know what? I'd rather just wait a couple of rounds and try to get that guy as opposed to drafting Alfred Morris, who's going to get 1,300 yards on the ground, but unless he has 12 touchdowns in a year, he's useless. I had him last year, and he would have 95 yards or 115 yards on the ground, no receptions, no touchdowns.
Right. And this guy could rush for 100 yards, and in our league, that's 6 points. Did we change that?
I had thrown that out there in the voting.
Did we go back to 10 yards a point for receiving?
I had thrown that in there, but it got voted.
I wonder if that. I can't remember. I don't remember off the top of my head what.
It got voted down. I had put that in.
Okay.
As a voted, got voted down. I mean, it was just my. your initial reaction to having more as well a year and be like, oh, this guy's a really good running back, but I'm not getting anything for it.
That might be something to consider in the future, is going back to 10 yards, like keeping the receiving yards at 15 just because these crazy yardage numbers, and then 10 yards a point for running backs just to make that 100-yard game, because they're so rare now, to kind of make them pay off.
I agree with that 100%. I think that's, I mean, I'll keep putting it out there every year until I'm not allowed to anymore, but I think that it's hard to, if you have like a bell cow guy like Morris, or even Murray, like if Murray has 125 yards in a game, well, that's not even 10 points, and that's a very good game, right? As opposed to a receiver who has 5 catches for 50 yards, giving the same amount, and that is sort of a very pedestrian game, you know?
Right, exactly. And unless, and like you said, unless Alfred Morris isn't getting 5 catches to add on to that, you know, if you can get, man, if you get 10 points out of your running back each week, that's a monster number.
Right, and if a guy is getting 100 yards per game, he's going to get you 1,600 yards in a season, well, that's a monster season. So you should kind of correlate to, there should be some correlation between fantasy and reality. That if a guy's going to average, if a guy's going to give you 1,600 yards in a year, he shouldn't be like the 30th running back ranked in our league.
Right, exactly.
Behind like Shane Green and, Giovanni Bernard last year. Giovanni Bernard, I think he's going to be really good this year, but I mean last year, let's say, you know what I'm saying? So that's what my push was for.
And then, you know, speaking of running backs, you look at Brian, who's got LeSean McCoy and Jamal Charles. If you look at all of these lists that are coming out, Matthew Berry, NFL.com, Yahoo, the top 2 players in the PPR league is LeSean McCoy and Jamal Charles, and Brian has them both. Are these the greatest 2 keepers in the history of the ROFFL?
I would have to take a look, but it's certainly the best combinations of running backs and going into the season knowing that he doesn't have to draft a running back for, like, 7 rounds. You know, I mean, injuries happen, but, like, the fact that he doesn't have to worry about it forever, and he's in a good spot, he's picking fourth, there's going to be a receiver there or a tight end if he wants to take that. He's going to be there, he's going to give him, you know, 95 catches. So he's in phenomenal shape. Him and VA are in, like, probably in the best shape of anybody.
Man, his top 3 players, okay, are going to be LeSean McCoy, Jamal Charles, and then one of Brandon Marshall, Dez Bryant, Calvin Johnson, Julio Jones. He's going to have his pick of the one of those 4 guys is going to be in his lap to take.
Or Jimmy Graham.
One of those 5 guys is going to be there at number 4 for Bryan, and his top 3 just wow. And then he can take another receiver on the back, and then another. Like his first 3 picks are all going to be receivers. So you look at the three receivers, all the top receivers that are available. He's going to have 3 of those guys.
Right. The first 3 picks are all going to be receivers. You can make a strong case that Nick's going to do the same thing. Nick's got Peterson and Leighton, so it's not like, you know, right, Nick is in bad shape at all. You know, Peterson's got Nick's got Peterson and Leighton, and then you mentioned the 5. Pass catchers that are going to be in the top 6 picks, right?
Right.
Forte being the other one.
Right.
So, of those 5, whoever Brian doesn't pick, Nick's going to pick.
So Nick could have Jimmy Graham or Julio Jones or Brandon Marshall.
Yeah.
Or Dez Bryant. Or if VA, you know, if VA screws up the board and doesn't take Calvin Johnson number 1, maybe he's there. Who knows?
Yeah. So those guys are in fantastic shape.
We're all in agreement, right? Like that's the top 6. Those
I had mentioned that
those
to
are the
you,
top 6 picks in some order.
It's going to be Calvin Johnson, Dez Bryant, Forte, Graham, Marshall, and Jones. Those are the top 6 picks. I had forgotten that Forte was in, so I picked 6. And so I'm like, you know, there are really only 5 great players, and I picked 6, of course. And then when you had told me that Forte is available, I was like,
yeah, I mean, like I said, the top where we're at is a great place to be.
It gets really murky after the 6 guys go. And then it's just your personal preference as to who you want.
Right, then it just becomes who you want to get. No, I don't want to update this. Hold on.
I do have a question about, well, first of all, do you want to reveal who you're keeping or no? One of your two keepers?
I think one of my keepers is obvious. The second keeper, not so much.
Okay.
So.
Me too.
So, you know, take that for what it's worth. One of them is, I will be keeping a pass catcher. We'll put it that way.
Okay.
And then after that, whether it's a runner or a thrower or another pass catcher, I haven't decided yet.
I'm with you. The obvious one is I mean, I'll just say Le'Veon Bell is the obvious keeper for me. And then the pass catcher, so to speak, I'm choosing between three people. Everybody knows who those three people will be when they look at the team. So it's just which one of those three I end up taking. I honestly don't know who it is. I don't really like any of them.
You have what? Amendola, T.Y., Reggie Wayne, Kendall Wright. Now, before we get to that, I actually had you down to keep Alfred Morris, and you kind of broke a little news here that you're keeping Le'Veon Bell.
I am keeping Bell. That's a definite. That's a lock.
That's a lock.
Keeping Bell.
You're not pulling the wool over our eyes.
I'm not. That's not a thing. And again, it goes back to what we had just talked about. Bell is going to catch, you know, 60 passes or 55 passes. He's their short yardage back, you know. There's no robbery there. I don't think LeGarrette Blount's going to be their short yardage guy. So I feel very good with Bell. He's a good pass catcher. I think in PPR he'll be one of the top 10 running backs. So I'm good with him. And I just had a miserable experience with Morris last year. I honestly wouldn't even draft him if he was available. I can't draft another running back who's going to get me.
Hold on,
you know, 1,300 yards. And
hold on one second. I got to go shut my window. There's some construction going on outside, and I can't even hear you. Hold on. Nice little pause. I'll tell you what, I don't know how you New Yorkers deal with the construction and garbage truck noise all fucking day. That is
construction going on right outside my building right now.
I mean, it is ridiculous. Okay, I also didn't realize how good Le'Veon Bell was last year.
Bell was my best pick. I picked Bell and Kendall Wright were my two best picks last year. Bell, I got him late because he was injured.
He had 45 catches for 400 yards, and he had 860 on the ground with 8 touchdowns.
Hey, he missed the first 3 games of the season, too, I think. So he
missed the first 3 games.
So, I'm very happy with him. I actually am very happy with Bell. I'm glad that I'm keeping him. He's a good keeper for me, and that's fine. But it's just whatever wide receiver I pick, I hold on to, which is going to be either Wayne, Hilton, or Wright. So
Amendola not on the board.
He's the dead to me territory situation with Amendola. I mean, in all fairness, you know, depending on where Amendola falls in this particular draft, I wouldn't be against drafting him again just because, depending on where he drops. But after last year, there's no way. There's no way. If I would have, I don't want to talk about it, but there's just no way I'm keeping Amendola.
Okay. So you got.
And there's nothing you can text me in the middle of the second game of a preseason that will make me change my mind.
You know, look, I have said that I feel bad about that.
I know it wasn't your fault. I have to be responsible for my own decisions, but there was. I don't want to talk about it.
I was all up on him.
So was I. I thought it was like the greatest thing in the world. I'm like, Wes Walker's gone. They love Amendola. They brought him in. They said they basically said we don't need you, Wes Walker, because we upgraded.
Right.
With Daniel, we upgraded. That's everything coming out of New England. It was like, that's a big upgrade, but, you know, and it's, so it goes. I don't like thinking about last year's draft.
I understand. Look, you and me both. Last year was very forgettable. Very forgettable. So it's down to T.Y., Reggie Wayne, and Kendall Wright. Now, I don't want to talk you into anything, but Reggie Wayne should not be a consideration for you.
Okay. I don't know. I have to wait. Actually, to be honest, I'm funny. I'm leaning towards keeping Reggie Wayne. I want to see what happens in the preseason before I make any calls. But those are the three guys. Wright had 90 catches for me last year. I'm thinking about keeping Wright as well.
Kendall Wright is nice.
Yeah.
So you should not keep him. so I can take him on the back end in the second round. But
well, there's no way Wright would make it back around.
No, there's no way.
I would gladly take Wright in the second round if I don't keep him.
There's no way. Wright should be a first round pick. You know, just looking at this spreadsheet that Scott had sent out in June, not a lot of players that can't be kept. There's so many guys that are keeper options for people and great players that are going to be back in the mix. This is going to be Parker had sent something to GroupMe earlier that he's so excited about the draft, and I think this is going to be the best draft yet in terms of talent. Like, I think every team could be very deep.
I mean, I agree. I think that the only position that I have to get a little nervous at is wide receiver. So it's why, you know, I mean, last year I figured, you know, I drafted Morris and I had said to myself, you know, I need to draft a wide receiver in the second round. But then I looked and I'm like, oh, wide receiver seems so deep. I'm just going to draft, David Wilson instead. You know, make sure my running backs are all. And then when it got back around to me, I'm like, oh my God, there's no wide receivers really left. And I kind of freaked out a little bit. I drafted Hilton, who wasn't terrible, but wasn't as good as I would have liked him to be. I think that wide receivers are a little thin. I think that, well, especially because of the way we do the keeper, the first round talent of wide receivers, you know, you have, if you want to look at who's available, we already spoke about the top six. And then after the top six is gone, it's like Garcon, it's Cruz, it's Roddy White. And then after that, where would you even go after those three guys?
Let's see. I don't know. You're right. Receiver on paper seems deep. But then you end up drafting guys like Darius Hayward-Bey, Stevie Johnson, you know?
It's one of those weird things where, you know, I don't even know. I mean, there's this definite drop-off. I mean, you want to get a number one wide receiver. You really, really need to try to get one of those.
Right.
So after Cruz and Garcon go, unless Parker keeps Cobb over Cruz, unless he keeps Garcon over Cobb, which I don't think he'll do, but unless, you know, either way, those guys are interchangeable, but they'll go early. Once those guys go, I mean, who is the, like, Percy Harvin? I mean, do you really want him to be the first wide receiver you take off the board? I don't know. I mean, I wouldn't be thrilled if he was the first one. I actually had the keeping Michael Floyd and not keeping the two running backs.
Oh, really? Okay, that's interesting. So you think Dave has faith in Carson Palmer?
I do. I think that Floyd finished the year super strong. He had over 1,000 yards, right? He was a monster at the end of the year.
He was. And that's, you know, that's kind of the guy they thought they were getting the year before.
Right. I think you have to go not so much Palmer, but you have to, like, Arian's offense is one of those situations where the wide receivers do benefit from it.
Right.
The reason why
he had 65 catches for 1,000 yards and 5 touchdowns.
Right. He did a lot of that damage in the second half, though, right?
Right. So who do you think Navi keeps? Antonio Brown and whom?
Giovanni Bernard.
Interesting. See, I was going to have. I had him go on the receiver route. I had him keeping Harvin.
Harvin.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess he can keep Harvin, yeah, for sure. I mean, I don't know.
You know, either one of those guys that he doesn't take, he could probably end up drafting.
In the first round, yeah,
in
for sure.
In the first round.
Yeah, it's just a matter of, so certainly Bernard, that's an interesting point. Certainly Bernard would draft him in the first round, and considering he picked 13th, he can draft Bernard in the second round if he wanted to.
Right.
You know, and I guess Harvin, maybe he couldn't do that, like, I guess, you know, if he doesn't draft, if Harvin makes it to him, I guess Rich, who I have Rich keeping Vincent Jackson and Drew Brees, you know, Rich has done really well by just drafting wide receivers, right? So, you know, Rich might take Percy, and maybe he doesn't get him. So maybe you're right. Maybe he would keep Percy for that reason alone.
Right. I mean, you don't want to leave that to Rich because, I mean, you look at Rich, he's keeping who? Breeze and Vincent Jackson.
Yeah, I agree. So, I mean, again, so, I mean, you
Rich,
can say that.
So, but see, Rich is in the market for a receiver and a running back.
Right. Percy might be the best receiver available at that point.
Right. And then running back, where does he go for running backs?
Well, running back, he might just go, he might redraft Ryan Matthews. I don't know if I would. Again, the running back things are so weird. Monty Ball is still going to be available. It depends on how he does in the preseason in Denver, what he does with that. Andre Ellington, all these guys are kind of, Reggie Bush might be available at that point, probably will be, if you want to, you know, one of the pass catching running backs. You know, I think all those guys, I feel like late in the draft, you really don't want to be picking sort of in like the 9, 10, 11 area, or 12 even, where Parker's picking, but where Nami and Rich are picking, when you have those two quick picks like that, you really get a good chance of getting like two really good, I mean, like it's such a good spot to pick. I mean, when I won almost 10 years ago,
how's that sound to say?
That's brutal. Even when I've had a couple of good years since then, and just picking later in the draft just makes me a million times happier. I know I'm not going to get one of these top six guys, but I can really plan out like the first couple of picks better than when I draft early, which I really can't. There's really not much I can do. I can just I know one of my first picks now. I know I'm going to get one of the top six guys. I know that, but then I have no clue what's going to happen. There's just too many things, too many variables by the time I pick again.
But you do know a general idea of who your options are.
Yeah, and I have.
You can do research on those guys, and then you can fall in love with two of them, and know that you're going to probably get them.
Right. I mean, I do game plan. I'm one of the quicker pickers in the draft. I generally have a decent idea. I know like the position, and then I'll kind of narrow it down. I'll fall in love with a couple of guys, and then there'll be these kind of lines of demarcation where I'll be like, well, this is the player I need, or like the wide receiver I need to get. And if I don't get him, there's not a single player that I really want in the next like three rounds. So I'd better get this person, and that's when I'll generally reach for a player.
I mean, I haven't been in the top of the draft in a very long time, so knowing that I'm going to get one of these top six players, it's pretty exciting because he's going to be on my team for the next 3 years.
That's the other great part about it. Now, whether you get a guy like Johnson, Bryant, Forte, Graham, Marshall, Jones, all those guys are young enough, even Marshall, who's not that young, at least Marshall you can keep for another couple of years. All those guys are young enough where you know you're not, it's not just a pick for this season, you know that you're in good shape for next year as well.
Right, it's an investment.
At the least.
Right,
and you already have, even Crabtree. So if you keep Crabtree, he's still young and good. So if things go in the right way for you and you get Crabtree and the guy that you really want this year, you know you'll have them next year also. Both of them, Crabtree and whoever you pick first. Like me, I'll have Bell and whoever I pick first.
Right.
Guaranteed next year.
Guaranteed.
That's a good feeling.
Guaranteed. Let's talk about Parker. There was a question in the draft book about who the most dominant league owner is. And for my money, this question was a no-brainer. Where Parker has picked he has top five finishes each of the last 5 years.
That'd be crazy. Is that true?
I know it's at least four. I wrote it down. Spoiler alert, I wrote an article for the draft book this year. And
okay, that's awesome.
And that was one of my stats for him. It's at least top five in the last four. You know what? It might be. Rich has finished in the top five four out of five, and Parker I think was the last four or the last 5 years. Now, each year he's drafting at the bottom of the draft, and consistently make it back into the top five the following year is so impressive. He's so dominant right now. And then you look at his keepers, Peyton Manning. I mean, who thought Peyton Manning was going to do what he did the last two seasons? And kind of roll the dice, and now he's going to go one more year. I mean, he could throw 60 touchdowns this year with the rule changes and the point of emphasis on the receivers and defensive backs again. Throw in Randall Cobb and that crazy Packers offense. Is there any slowing that Parker down? It's crazy how much he's taken over recently.
He's already in good spots, and the one thing that Parker does so well, obviously Parker does like a ton of research, really knows who he wants by the time he gets to the draft, and he takes doesn't take these grand chances, but he just takes chances on players that he really wants. And most of the time, I mean, they're not risks, really. He just plays small little chances, and they generally work out pretty well for him. And he just knows how to build a team. He knows when to take appropriate positions and appropriate players. I mean, the top three this year, Rich, Nabi, and Parker, are, if you probably looked at the stats, those are the three best guys in the league as far as consistently being good. Rich finished second the year before this, right?
Rich was second the year before. Let's see.
He lost to Parker.
I lost to Parker. Rich lost to Scott in 2012.
Okay. Yep. I remember that because I played Rich in the semifinals that year, and that's when he had the Jets defense. And the Jets lost to the Titans. I remember watching that Sunday night game or Monday night game, thinking to myself, I think Tennessee needed to score like he had Tennessee's defense against the Jets, and all Tennessee. They had to score like 26 points on defense, and they just, I think Sanchez threw like 12 interceptions and fumbled three times. It was fucking hard. It was, oh my God.
And Rich finished fourth in 2011. That's what I mean. Like, you know, Rich and Parker have been consistently in the top five each of the last five seasons.
I was going to write, I wrote an article for the draft book also, but I was originally going to write what I wanted to write, what I really wanted to write, maybe I will, hopefully one of these days. I wanted to write like an oral history of sort of what happened 2 years ago at the draft when Jason and Jarrett traded picks, which allowed Rich to trade with VA
and get Drew Brees.
Essentially just handing over Drew Brees. Just like, here you go, here's a couple of championships. Just in what is just, I mean, I obviously, there was no collusion there, but VA moving back in the draft, and VA finished, I think, second to last, and then last this year. So since the trade with Rich, they've gone exactly in opposite directions. And it was also like the third year in a row, Rich totally fucked over Jason during the draft. And I love Jason. Yeah, he's one of my best friends. He was a groomsman, but his face, after he had made the trade with Jarrett, where they essentially just switched picks, and Jason got nothing in the deal. Jarrett got Ray Rice. Jason got nothing.
Nothing.
He moved up two spots in the next round. It was almost nothing. It was just like, I'll do you a solid if you do me a solid type of thing. And then Jason's face when Rich and BA made the trade was just, I mean, it was really, really funny.
It was really funny. It was really funny.
I mean, now that nobody was hurt. Nobody's hurt. So, I mean,
Jason thought that he was getting Breeze for the next three seasons, and then VA and Rich just swapped, and Rich was like, oh, no, I'm taking Breeze.
Yeah, it was really just unbelievable. And I just want to know what happened in the car ride up there between Jared and Jason, because you know how Jared tries to make trades. It's impossible. So I just want to know what the discussion was like in the car ride that led to Jason saying, all right, well, I guess all we're going to do, we can just swap picks and nothing bad's going to happen.
Right.
And then I want to know what VA and Rich were thinking, because once that trade happened, I mean, they made the trade instantaneously.
It's unbelievable. You're right. That would be very cool to do an oral history of that. Well, I have an idea I want to do an oral history of the league. Which I will do at some point in the next 5 years, but
maybe the 20th anniversary.
Right. I can't decide though if I want to do it by book style or if I want to do almost like a 30 for 30, like, and produce a movie. But
I mean, I don't know how many people would watch it. I think people would watch something like that. I think there's people that are not the 14 of us would watch something like that.
I mean, that's a lot of work if I do a documentary. That's a lot of work for only 13 other people to watch.
It is a lot of work for 13 other people to watch. But think about all the work that Mark does for only 13 other people. Think about that.
Right, that's what I mean. And so, you know, I could easily do it all myself. I could shoot it all myself and edit it all myself, which it would just be time. That's all it would be.
You are the master.
I could do that. I could do it over the course of a summer. I could do a week in New York and do all the interviews.
Are we breaking news right now? Or is this video going to happen?
Nah, it's an idea I had last year, and I forget who I was talking about it with. But it's something I am going to do. I just don't know if it's going to be written or if it's going to be.
You know what? The next wedding, the next Rafa wedding, just everybody will be in a room, and it's a good way to get it going.
Yeah, but it's like, excuse me, it's one of those things where I'm going to need. It's going to be 2 to 3 hours of interviews per person. You know? Because you got kind of the beginning, you got the middle, you got memories, you got the end, you got, you know, there's a lot of big moments in there, so.
There are a lot of huge moments.
So it's one of those things I need to figure out what my arcs are and how I want to tell those specific stories. Inevitably, someone's going to left out. If I put everything in, it's going to be 5 hours.
At least. I mean, do you remember years ago? I think it was the 50th year of the league. Just didn't work. Put together like a slideshow of everything.
It was the first
3 years.
Exactly.
And that was like 20 minutes. And that was the first 3 years.
Yeah. So. Yeah, it's something I want to work on. It might be a 20-year project. It's like, you know, over. Maybe I start doing interviews. Like year 17, 18, 19, and then I spend the whole 19 off season putting it together.
I mean, those are big plans, man. But if there's anything I can do to help, I would certainly like it. Be a great idea.
Well, just, you know, keep your memory intact so we can.
I remember I said that. Well, as I'm on record, there's audio evidence of me saying I will help.
So keep your memory intact so we can retell these stories. Okay. You know, let's talk about Jarrett real quick. He's a guy that we don't talk about too often, but he's got a nice pair of keepers.
Right. What do you have him holding on to?
Well, I'm going to say Fitz and Julius Thomas.
Yeah, that's what I'm at with him.
Okay, so he's.
I think he's waiting to hear about. I've spoken to him a long time about this. I think he's waiting to hear about Gordon. I think that if there's a number of games that Gordon can get suspended where Jarrett would keep him.
Really.
Yeah, there is a number. And I would say that it's certainly, I don't know if it's possible. I think, I don't know how many games he's going to get spent. If it's like less than six, I would not be surprised if Jarrett holds on to him.
I mean, I would say it's going to at least be eight. That's what I would think.
I mean, I would say that also.
Even if this year-long ban gets reduced, which, I mean, I don't know if you heard the latest news from Wednesday, was the secondhand smoke defense and the samples. I would say that that's his third time. It's a third offense. So I would say at half a year at least if he wins his appeal, and that's a pretty big if.
I agree. I think there's no way he gets lower than eight. I think that the thing that he has going for him is obviously not the secondhand smoke thing, but the idea that he would not have gotten suspended at all if it was the Olympics or any other major sports organization. I think that's probably his best defense. But
you're probably right. Now, Josh Gordon is going to be really interesting to see. You know, I assume Jared's not going to keep him. So.
Yeah, I'm with you.
Someone is going to draft Josh Gordon, right?
Well, certainly. I mean, we're going to find out about his suspension, I think, tomorrow. So if he gets suspended for 8 games, then...
Then someone's going to take him pretty early if Jarrett
doesn't keep him. Yeah, absolutely.
That's a wasted keeper for a year and a half to only have him for a year and a half. But someone's going to draft him in, like, the 12, 10, 11...
Oh, I would say before that. I would say that... That's an eighth or ninth round pick if Gordon's getting 8 games.
Let's say Gordon's gone for the year. Then where do you take?
Okay.
I mean, if Gordon's
gone for the year, then I would not draft him. Period. And if I start the season bad, then he would be somebody that I would just pick up.
Yeah.
If I could. But I'm sure everybody else would be thinking that, and I'm sure.
Right.
If somebody has a bad first week, I'll pick him up.
Right. If someone's like, hey, look, my team is pretty stacked. Let's just take Josh Gordon with the 15th pick.
Right, I can see Nobby doing something like that.
But that's just, man, that's a mighty stash to just waste a roster spot the entire year.
I mean, it's one of those things where you can hold on to him for the first few weeks before the bye weeks. And if you're 3-0, you can hold on to them. And if you're 0-3, you can hold on to them. You know, if you're not really fighting for it, you know what I'm saying? So it's I can see somebody doing it, certainly at the end, you know, not his favorite word, value, right? Like, he would be, it would be one of these guys where if you draft him, you're drafting him for the two following seasons, potentially. You're also making sure that nobody else can get him at the end of the year. So there's that kind of thing, but...
It's going to be really interesting. It's going to be really interesting to see that play out. I guess we'll know more on Friday, but...
I have a question for you. Who do you think... I think it's pretty obvious, but who is Jason Kipling?
Alshon Jeffrey and Jordy Nelson. You know, if honestly, I mean, you hear Brandon Marshall talk on Wednesday about how Jay Cutler could be MVP. You know, Jason could roll the dice with the Bears and just take Alshon and Jay Cutler and then ride or die with those guys.
Oh, that's your move, yeah.
I mean, that's my move. I mean, that's having a whole lot of confidence in Jay Cutler, which I do not. But,
yeah.
I mean, I would rather have Andrew Luck. I think the Colts are not going to be as good as they were the last 2 years this year. But still win the division. But, yeah, I don't know how you don't take Alshon Jeffrey or Jordy Nelson. I mean, he could end up drafting either one of his quarterbacks. I mean, do you want Reggie Bush? Zach Stacy is going to be the number one down there. He's going to get the lion's share of the carries. On a Rams team, that will be pretty good. Can he draft Zach Stacy at the number 10 spot? Probably. Could he draft Jordy Nelson at the number 10 spot? No way. So,
no way. Yeah, that's the truth. And I looked at Nelson as a guy that, like, I would take at six. Like, I would take Nelson at six. So there's no way he would get Nelson. And then it's the Reggie Bush. It's all a matter of. I mean, if I was him, I would keep Jeffrey and Nelson. It's all a matter of does he want to have a wide receiver and a running back. A lot of I don't know how a lot of people think this way, but I think that certain people just want to keep a variety of positions if they can.
Right.
But I don't see how he would keep those guys.
No, and you know, you put yourself, like you said just now, you put yourself in a tough spot when you keep two receivers or two running backs, because. Right. Then you have to make up. You have to make up those two picks. But if you don't have anybody, I mean, you have to look at your roster and be honest about it. Who are your two best players? Who are your two best value players? Who's going to put up the most points in the system that they play in? And those are the guys you have to keep. Have to. And then you make it work. Then you try to make moves. I'll tell you right now. I am not trading picks with anybody.
It's funny that you say that because so what had happened was I was going to write this article about that particular trade. And then I was like, I can't do this. And then I was going to write an article about, especially, just don't trade on draft day. I mean, you got these picks. I mean, surely trading up is the only way to trade. There's no point of trading back. I don't care how many extra picks you get in the back end.
Right. It doesn't matter.
I think, you know, Navi put it to some success, but I just feel like, especially in the first round. Now, just get the best. I mean, there's so much talent in the first round. Just get the best available guy. And it's just, to me, like, even if I was picking, like, where, like, Jared's picking eighth, all right? And he had asked me if you think anybody would be willing to move back to eight. And I'm thinking to myself, there are these six players that are available. Why would anybody in the top six want to move back at all? I don't care who you're getting. I don't care how many extra. Like, is anybody you're going to get is going to be better than Forte. You know, like, I don't see the point of, like, moving backwards in the draft. Also, you want to talk about the reason why the draft takes forever, the negotiation of trading draft picks while we're at the draft is super time-consuming.
And then it, you know, they end up talking for 10 or 15 minutes about it, and then ultimately it's, I'm going to keep my pick. Now let me decide who I'm going to pick. And then 10 minutes is wasted doing that, and then we're a half hour for a single draft pick. No, of course.
Right. And times out of ten, it's always like, ah, you know what? I'm just going to take the guy I want.
Right.
So I'm anti draft day trade.
You know, we should. It'll never pass, but we should almost have a rule where there's no draft day trades.
There's no way that would pass. Although, there's no way there would be too many people saying that it's not fair, and it is a really cool part of the league that we can do that. It's just that I wish
it's a time thing. It's crazy.
I wish that, you know, if you wanted it, everybody does their research, and if you look at the first round and you say to yourself, well, you know, let's say I really want, you know, I'm just going to say, you know, we haven't talked about him, so let's say I really want Gronkowski, all
right?
And I know that he's not going to make it to pick 14, so let's say I'm rich, and I really want Gronkowski, and I know he's not going to make it to pick 14, so I want to move up to pick 11 where Dave is to grab Gronkowski. You can work all of that out before we even step foot into the draft room in Seattle.
Of course.
You know what I'm saying? Before you have to work that out, and then, you know, you can agree on it, and then when we go in, you can announce the trade, and everybody will kind of make their notation. It doesn't have to happen on the actual draft day. You know? So, I mean, if you wanted to do one of those things where, like, oh, you can have draft trades, but it would have to be done before we're in the room, I'd be down with that, too. It would probably save over an hour of draft time.
What do you think, before I let you go, what do you think the draft time is going to be?
You know what? There's 11 of us that are going to be there, right? Which I think is pretty amazing.
11 or 10?
I think 11. I think the only three that are not coming are Dave, Brian, and Jared.
Okay.
I don't know for sure if Navi's going. I think he's going to, though. I think he's going to go.
Oh, he's on the fence, huh?
What's that?
Was Navi's on the fence?
Maybe I'm wrong. I can't speak for him. I thought, because I'm always speaking through, because I've asked Mark a million times, like, oh, who's going, who's not going? And I think he might have said something like, because, you know, now he's saving the world. You know, he's in Africa saving children with medicine. I don't know what he's doing, but I'm pretty positive he is going. Okay. So, and I know those other three, the other three guys aren't. So I think, I'm pretty positive it's 11, which I think is what we had in Vegas.
Right.
We've had 11 before in other spots, so I'm really excited that 11 people are going to Seattle. I think it's going to be great. I think that I'm hoping the fact that several of us are flying, like you guys did most of the time, like several of us are flying 3,000 miles away, and even you guys are being in community. It's not like LA is close to Seattle.
No.
So everybody's flying hundreds of miles, and I'm hoping people are thinking to themselves, even as much joy as I have in the draft room, like to just you know, quicken it up a little bit so we're there for, like, I'm going to call it right now 6 hours and 45 minutes.
6:45.
Yeah. A little under 7, I'm going to go.
Is there any way we get under 6?
Is there any way we get under 6?
Yeah.
Oh, man. No. I mean, I hope so. I would hope so, but I don't think so. I mean, but if we start drafting at noon, which is what the hope is, right?
The hope.
6 hours and 45 minutes means we're done at 6:45, which I think is a good time to go and get food and enjoy the night and hang out. So
now
I think that seems like a good time.
I don't want to hear about the East Coasters complaining about the time difference. So you guys, get yourself adjusted now.
I don't think you're going to have a problem. I'm heading in Portland with you. I'm meeting you guys in Portland on Wednesday, so I will be fully adjusted certainly by Friday.
Okay. All right.
No complaining from me.
All right. Just saying. That's all I'm not saying. I'm just saying.
I'm not saying that it's out there. You're just saying. The time difference will not be an issue.
Okay.
I can't wait.
Can't wait. It's going to be so awesome. Okay. Now, in closing,
yes.
Who's going to win? Give me your ROFFL bowl and give me a champion. It is July 31st. By the way, 5 years ago today, me, Perk, and my sister left Maine on my road trip to Los Angeles. Our first stop was New York City, Mark's old apartment where he had that cool little ground floor patio back area.
Yeah.
That was a great time. He gave we got the draft. He gave me the draft book. Then I think you, me, and Jason and I were just talking about it the whole time. That was 5 years ago today.
Wow! Congratulations. I still talk about that to my students actually who say that they're stuck in Brooklyn. I'm like, you know, I know people that have traveled across the country to do what they want. They're inspirational, and I mention that stuff to my students. So you're the Chris Brockman Awards, it's sprinkled on young black children. So you should be proud of yourself for that.
As it should be. Hey, if you ever need me to speak to your class, you could just...
Actually, you know what you want to do? This is breaking news. Only Mark knows that. Mark is doing the commencement speech at my school's graduation next year.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah.
You know, I wrote a commencement speech for my high school that I didn't get to air. Yeah, well, in fairness to them, they didn't ask me. I just wrote a speech.
Uh-huh.
Like, if they would have asked
me.
Yeah, it's on chrisbrockman.com, and it's if they would have asked me, this is the speech I would have gave. And you know what? Not a lot of people like it.
you got a very peculiar taste, but I'm all in on Brockman.
I do. Okay, so give me a finals matchup. Give me a champion on July 31st, based entirely on nothing, on who we think people are keeping.
Based on who we're keeping and where the picks are going to go, I'm going to put Brian Young in the final.
Okay.
And I'm going to have him going up against, I'm going to say it right now, Parker Day.
Wow.
Another
top five.
Parker Day.
Maybe a third title. Maybe a first title for Brian.
Yeah. Well, also, and I'm going to put here as my backup plan, I'm going to put Jason Sherman.
Oh, could it be a fourth runner-up for Jason?
I'm going to call it right now. Jason finishes second.
Nothing would make me happier than defeating Jason in the championship. My first title and his fourth runner-up. Nothing would make me happier.
Well, I'm glad to say that I've been there, done that.
Yes, you have. Yes, you have. He is the 2003 and the 2006 ROFFL champion. He's looking to get back into the playoffs in 2014. He's handsome. You love him. He's 5 Second Stare owner Jason Cantor joining me on the crossover. Thanks, pal, and we will see you in 3 weeks.
See you in 3 weeks.
All right, buddy. Peace out.
Peace.
ROFFL.